This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. It's Friday, and that means it's time for our Reporters Roundtable. Today, we've got reactions to my interview with presidential candidate Tom Tancredo, more bad behavior from FEMA, and speaking of bad behavior, is football star Michael Vick's career over? With us is Corey Dade, a Southern correspondent for The Wall Street Journal, Clarence Page, a Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for the Chicago Tribune, and John Yearwood, world editor of the Miami Herald. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you, Farai.
So, Clarence, let me start with you. You heard me speak with the Congressman Tom Tancredo about his bid for the presidency. As I mentioned, he did not support renewing the Voting Rights Act. He's not a fan of the Congressional Black Caucus, but he did step up and go to the NAACP convention. What do you think members of the community who may be, say, on the fence about possibly voting for Republicans would make of someone like him?
Well, Black Americans are all over the map when it comes to the immigration issue, and that is Tancredo's big issue. He's not somebody given a realistic chance of winning the nomination at this point. But even he, when he first declared, when he first announced his intentions, said, you know, if you don't announce your candidacy for president, nobody pays attention to you. And he wants to be paid attention to. He wants his issue get some attention, which it is getting. And Black Americans are divided about the immigration issue. But at the same time, I think have a very well, there's a real visceral reflex that says, gee, this looks an awful lot like an anti-Mexican movement, you know, the kind of a discrimination that we've seen in Black history. And I think that's turned off a lot of Black Americans who might otherwise have been on his side.
John, you're at the Miami Herald. The head of the National Urban League's offices in Miami is very, very clear that he thinks immigration as it stands right now, including undocumented immigration, is hurting Black folks. How do these things play out in Miami?
Well, I thought your interview with Tancredo was interesting for a number of fronts. It's interesting to hear Tancredo say that he went to the NAACP's convention because he was asked. As you may know, Tancredo was in Miami probably about almost a year ago, in which he made some comments, including calling, referring to Miami as a third world country, and he was asked to come back and have a discussion about that, and he, for various reasons, chose not to return. So it seems that he doesn't go everywhere that he is asked. But another interesting point, I thought, in listening to him, he has talked a lot about wanting to get rid of the Congressional Black Caucus, but given Tancredo's position and the position of other conservatives who have argued that an influx of immigrants would eventually diminish the Black voting strength, leading ultimately, I think, to the reduce of the number of Blacks in Congress. Well, if he wants to get rid of the Congressional Black Caucus, one way to do that is to allow more immigrants into the country.
Interesting. Corey, what do you think?
Well, I think at this point, instead of perhaps compassionate conservatism, which we've heard before, perhaps we can put Tancredo in the category of compassionate idealism, in the sense that him not wanting, as he put it, the balkanizing and separating of the races, it sort of ignores the fact that that separation happened 400 years ago and was codified for many years, many generations, and now largely, though not codified in law now, it's based in economic disparities and cultural differences. It's not wise to try to eliminate race-conscious politics or immigration policies as they stand now without first achieving a process of inclusion, without actually moving forward to break down barriers in tangible ways. And when you talk about his immigration policies or his views on immigration, they are largely punitive, and they are not solution-oriented in the ways that would attract Black voters. And certainly his concerns about the Black caucus, about any race-conscious politics, it raised the question, okay, if not that, then what? And so it's a question about what kind of real apparatus, other than everybody just getting along, he actually can put forth.
I want to move on to the Democrats. So you have a wide field of Democrats, as you have a wide field of Republicans. And the front runners are working hard to win votes in the early primaries. In Iowa, you've got John Edwards topping the polls. South Carolina, Michigan, and Florida, Senator Hillary Clinton leads Senator Obama by 10 points or more. Now, Senator Obama is raising a lot of money but needs more voter support. Corey, what do you think he needs to do to catch up with Senator Clinton?
Well, I think his greatest strength is his ability to campaign. And that is the very thing that Hillary Clinton has some perhaps weaknesses with, especially when you compare her to her peerless campaigning husband. Barack Obama needs to be everywhere. He needs to press the flesh. He needs to use his own abilities to win people over every day. And it's basically old-fashioned grassroots campaigning. He also needs to go after the woman vote. The woman vote, obviously, at this point outnumbers the male vote nationally, but also they are the swing voters on ideology. And so they're the ones who are going to determine largely the outcome of this election, certainly the primary. And that is the place where he is going to have to work harder to challenge Hillary Clinton.
John, this is probably irrelevant, but it just always sticks in my mind. I've been on the campaign trail several times. And one time, Chris Rock was years ago acting as a correspondent for Bill Maher's show. And he said, you know, he was doing a stand up outside and it was freezing cold and he's shivering and chattering his teeth. And he's like, I'm in New Hampshire and I can tell you with certainty that there are no black hair care products in New Hampshire. And it was just a little way of kind of talking about the demographics. I mean, with this whole change in the early primaries, there may be more states that have black voters. New Hampshire certainly doesn't have very many. But in Florida, Senator Obama isn't doing particularly well either. What's going on there?
Well, part of the reason for that, Farai, is that Senator Clinton has been down here often and has a very strong network. And clearly also because of her husband's influence, a lot of people, they are a known quantity. Although I might add that Senator Obama is far, far from giving up. I mean, he's coming down here this weekend. He's been down here often. His wife was here not too long ago. So the senator is being very aggressive on Florida for very good reason, because if you look at the map and if you look at the numbers, and I know we're still way out, but if you look at the numbers and you look at the early states as it relates to voting early next year, by the time you get to Mega Tuesday, if you have not been able to have some serious wins, you are pretty much out of it, because in looking at the numbers, Hillary would probably go into Mega Tuesday with probably well over 600 to 700 delegates. And after that, it's off to the races.
Clarence, how does this compare to previous races? It just seems one thing that people have talked about a lot is that things are just happening so early. There's so much campaign talk so early. Is there anything else that makes this go-round different?
Besides the fact they're going early is the fact that there are so many candidates. There's no incumbent in this race on either side, no incumbent vice president or president, and that makes it wide open. And the massive amounts of money that are being raised. The Internet, of course, has really come of age in this campaign, and we're seeing Barack Obama make a truly effective use of it, much like Howard Dean did back in 2004, which also has with it the caveat that look what happened to Howard Dean after Iowa. So
yeah,
raising money alone doesn't make you a winner. But no, the fact that this whole thing may be decided by February 5th, people who haven't been paying that much attention, and outside of us journalists and political junkies, I don't know if that many other people have been, a lot of folks are going to be shocked to see how early this race is going to be decided.
Well, in case you're just joining us, I want to reintroduce everyone. This is NPR's News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. We've got the Reporters Roundtable just listening to Clarence Page, a columnist for the Chicago Tribune, John Yearwood, world editor of the Miami Herald, and Corey Dade, a Southern correspondent for the Wall Street Journal. Just one more political topic, and then we have something completely different. So John Edwards may be third in the polls overall, but his wife Elizabeth is definitely making sure that he is pushing forward on women's issues. She told Salon that Senator Clinton is, quote, not as vocal a women's advocate, end quote, as her husband. She's featured in a New Hampshire ad describing her husband as a tough guy. Let's listen.
He has an unbelievable toughness, particularly about other people, and that is his ability to fight for them. You're not going to outsmart him. He works harder than any human being that I know, always has. It's unbelievably important that in our president we have someone who can stare the worst in the face and not blink.
Corey, as we all know, she has cancer. Her husband has been somewhat criticized in some quarters for sticking to his guns, pursuing the presidential race at this time. Is this designed to help deflect from that as much as to talk about his overall image?
Well, I think the criticism about him staying in the race has largely passed at this point. I think his biggest concern is actually coming up in the polls. She certainly is a sympathetic figure publicly because of her illness, but I think also because she has come off, certainly in his vice presidential run, as a very heady, self-possessed, and strong woman. And so she is an asset to him that way. I think when it comes to advocating women's issues, Hillary Clinton is a bit in a rock and a hard place in the sense that a woman candidate has to be careful about how heavily they advocate in favor of women, much the way certain black candidates are a little careful about doing too much advocacy in the name of African Americans. And so when you compare her to Bill Clinton, it's sort of an easy comparison. He has a degree of separation as a man. When you go to John Edwards, certainly he can take up that cross when Hillary Clinton is trying to be all things to all people.
Let me just jump in because we have one more topic,
sure,
that I want to get to. But briefly, gentlemen, Clarence, why don't you start? Why don't you each give me a quick comment on this?
On
Elizabeth Edwards, then we'll move on.
Oh, Elizabeth Edwards, yes. Well, she's a big asset for John Edwards, and we have to remember that John's been falling behind in the fundraising. The fact that when she went on the air arguing with Ann Coulter, that gave wonderful boost to Edwards' fundraising efforts, as well as Coulter's invitations to give speeches. She has been a great asset to the degree that I think that's really helped to reduce the criticism that John Edwards shouldn't be staying in the race with his wife going through her treatment.
John?
I read the interview, and I think it's the kind of thing that any spouse would say of her husband who's running for president. Certainly, if I were running for president, I'd want my wife to say the very same thing, whether it's completely accurate or not. But I think he knows that he's going up against Senator Clinton, who has really strong credentials in that area, and anything that they can do to try to chip away at that. And I thought this was an attempt to do just that.
I want to, before we move on, just really, this is a completely different topic. NFL quarterback Michael Vick is in trouble. He was indicted by a federal jury on charges of sponsoring a dogfighting ring. He denies those charges. Allegedly, he helped run the operation on his Virginia property. And authorities say that dogs fought each other and they were abused or killed by their owners if they lost. The 27-year-old Vick faces up to 6 years in prison and $350,000 in fines. The NFL officials say that Vick can play this season while his charges are pending. So the question for you, Corey, is should Michael Vick be allowed to play?
Well, here in Atlanta where I am, this is the issue of the moment. And I don't see, as well as when you look at when you listen to radio here, talk radio, online chats, et cetera, there is a majority, I'd say, opinion that Vic should play until his legal status changes, i.e., certainly until perhaps he is convicted, not that he probably will be. But that's the normal course for any athlete who's facing a criminal charge, and there's no tangible reason why that should change here. But when you talk about the NFL, you're talking about the most conservative, image-conscious professional sports league. And so the forces around, within and without and around the NFL are talking to him and his agent and his team about whether or not he should take a leave of absence. At this point, I don't see why he should be treated any differently than any other athlete who's been in trouble.
John, speaking of image conscious, Nike suspending the release of his shoes. So obviously that's not the NFL. It is a private institution. But is that a vote of no confidence?
Well, it's a vote of we somewhat confidence because somewhat no confidence because as you know, Nike has also decided to keep a lot of his merchandise that they have already that they're already selling out in the stores instead of recalling those. So it seems that what Nike is trying to do, I think, to some extent, is to have it both ways. Now, going back to the question about whether he should play, I think we still live in a country where you are innocent until proven guilty, and until it gets to the point, I think, where it starts infringing on his ability to play the game, I think that he should be allowed to do his job.
Clarence, you have a situation where PETA, the animal rights group, has threatened to protest the NFL if the league doesn't suspend Vic. Now, that group has the support of people like Russell Simmons, Reverend Al Sharpton. Is this going to raise a larger debate about animal rights and about issues like pit bulls being in neighborhoods and how the animals are treated?
Well, I wonder, Farah, because, I'm thinking stereotypes, as most people do, but I never really thought of the base of NFL ticket buyers being folks who are in the Humane Society and PETA. I may be wrong, but there's not a lot of crossover there, whereas with Al Sharpton, Russell Simmons, their fan base is largely African-American, which proportionally doesn't buy them any NFL tickets, but does provide most of the NFL's players. So it's kind of like with the Don Imus controversy, where he was brought down as much by black employees at NBC as he was by critics on the outside. So that's really what this kind of boils down to. It's all marketing. That's why Nike decided, well, let's suspend them. Because, let's face it, we're talking about professional football and professional athletics. Mostly we're talking about guys who work their way up on the playing field and didn't learn to read and write all that well and didn't learn that, dog fighting is not something that mainstream society enjoys. This is such an absurd situation, but it happens with NFL and NBA in particular, as they're constantly watching out for being embarrassed by their own players.
Well, Clarence, I'm going to have to leave it there. And gentlemen, just want to thank you, Clarence Page, Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for the Chicago Tribune, John Yearwood, world editor of the Miami Herald, and Corey Dade, Southern correspondent for the Wall Street Journal.